We got a real simple plan. One me and one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
You're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven. This might be college football heaven. Yeah.
This is ESPN's College Game Day Podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel, here's Reese Davis.
Conference is jockeying for television riches. Surprise, surprise. And maybe we'll have an expanded playoff sooner than we think. And for now, we really don't care about that too much because we have a Saturday full of games. This is the College Game Day Podcast for Friday, September 2nd. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel here to continue the race for the state. And Bill Connolly, our numbers expert, to make picks too. First of all, I know you guys are wrapped followers of my social media. So did you see what happened to me on Wednesday night?
I have alerts, so I was aware.
You're not telling the truth. Don't lie to America, Pete. That's not very nice. But I'm in Pittsburgh. I'm in Pittsburgh awaiting the backyard brawl there the night before. Ordered DoorDash from an Italian place. I get gnocchi and meatballs. They're supposedly great, great meatballs. Red sauce. Fabulous. DoorDash forgets to put the utensils in, which I did request. No problem. I'm not one of those people who gets mad about that. I go down to the front desk. I ask for utensils. They don't have them, but they assure me that they can find some, send them up. No problem. I go back up. I sit. I wait. And before long, it occurs to me that I've got two perfectly good forks at the end of my arms, and I don't know why I would need anything else. So I did what, you know, what men of action do sometimes. I didn't sit there and wallow in my problem. I picked up the gnocchi and the meatballs, and I ate it all with my hands and wiped up the red sauce with my fingers, and it was glorious.
It's like a junior mint. You just pop the gnocchi in, right? It's better than angel hair, I think, right?
Yeah, I would have done it with angel hair, though, too, Bill. I got to confess, I would have found a way to twirl it, you know, between the fingers and just eat it anyway.
No, you just kind of, you lift it, like, you know, you do what you have to do in a hotel room. There's no judgment. The rules, there are no rules when it's just you and food and the television. I, you know, go into, you know, weekend trips in Bristol or whatever, stop in West Hartford, get the Frank Pepe's, and they only come in boxes, you know, like 8 feet long or whatever. You kind of have to twirl it into like a cone to get it into the refrigerator in the hotel room. And I do it, and I eat it for breakfast the next day.
Frank Pepe's is one of the glorious pizza establishments on the planet.
Yeah.
And basically, Connecticut pizza is better than all of the other pizzas. It's better than New York. It's better than anywhere that you could possibly see. And you can't swing a stick without hitting a great pizza restaurant. The best Frank Pepe's is down in New Haven, but the one in West Hartford, close to Bristol, the ESPN campus, is not bad either.
Yeah, I no complaints there.
Come at me on that, Pete. I heard you scoff.
I'm not scoffing. I hate to give Connecticut that much credit, right? There's good pizza places in Connecticut. If there's good pizza places in New Haven specifically, you got Pepe's, you got Sally's, you got Modern. They're all good. I live in Boston, so I'm a little biased to my local pies there. But just the general hailing of Connecticut being anything that great makes me a little bit squeamish.
I can understand. You will like this. Now, my favorite Italian restaurant anywhere is Campagnola on the Upper East Side, New York City. But taken as collectively, I will take the North End over Little Italy every time. Every time.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that, right?
Yeah.
It's like you saying you take the Red Sox over the Yankees. Of course you're going to take the North End, right?
But Limoncello particularly.
Oh, that's Adazio's old place. God, Adazio went there like every other day.
Boy, what a great place that is. We were there before the Clemson game a few years ago, and I'll never forget Susan, the waitress. She was talking about all of the Clemson fans that had descended on. She goes, orange. They're all wearing orange. It was great. It was amazing. So good. Pete, you've been out there bouncing around breaking stories, and the poor old Pac-12 -2 is now gets another one in the minus column, getting beaten to the punch in the potential television negotiation.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting and kind of a nuanced thing, Reese. I don't know if they've gotten beaten to the punch, but they've arrived at the starting line together, The best bad analogy I can give about the news that came out of Big 12 headquarters the other day, and I'm not a poker player, so I'm going to chop this, is that everybody gets to see their cards, right? Like, in I can't stand on the table and tell you whose cards are going to be exponentially better, because I think now there's arguments for both sets of inventory right now, right? You know, you could argue Washington, Oregon are better properties. You could argue they also undercut the future because they clearly don't want to be there. So for the Big 12, this is a chance to catch them up a little bit, to mitigate that 1 year advantage of going early that the Pac-12 has. Does it guarantee anything? I don't think so, but I do think it's a positive development. It shows their aggression. It shows what they're attempting to do. But to declare it a resounding off the top rope victory, you only declare those in TV contracts when they're signed.
One thing I hadn't thought about until the discussion over the last couple of weeks is the importance of them being on the West Coast and therefore having night games, very late night games, and how that kind of there's a TV need there, and that might increase the Pac-12 or 10 or whatever's value a little bit more. But I don't know how you create value for the Pac-12 at all right now without basically creating a set of numbers with Oregon and Washington, and then without Oregon and Washington, and going from there.
Yeah. The late night windows are a huge driver in what's left in this market, Bill. I think that's a point that should be underlined and exclaimed and highlighted. And also, these leagues now, because of the financial gap, are having to accept a little bit of second-class citizenry, right? Which means they're going to have to embrace some Thursday windows. So the windows that are open in ESPN doesn't have any Mountain West are all of a sudden that are wide open are Friday night late, Saturday night late, and then maybe Thursday night late. And those are windows that are big and they're going to rate. Now, they're not going to rate like the Georgia-Oregon game will on Saturday. But those are big gaping holes that are going to be filled with games that millions of people watch. And now, how are those filled? Are those filled with a expanded Big 12 and they play more late games? I you don't know. Does the Pac-12 expand with some Mountain West schools and then they get filled that way? I can't give you the formula of how we're going to get there, but I guarantee you in the next decade, there will be very good college football on late night windows on Fridays and Saturdays.
Our people watch, and by our people, I mean college football fans. One argument that I reject out of hand is the notion that Christian McCaffrey didn't win the Heisman Trophy because no one saw him play. That's flat out false. Now, if you want to say Christian McCaffrey should have won the Heisman, then you have an argument. Here's the reason, and here's how I can back up that argument. If you go back through his season, he wasn't necessarily a preseason Heisman candidate, right? And he went through the month of September, and I think he scored one touchdown in a blowout against UCF, I think that was the winless UCF team. He didn't do anything to burst onto the scene. And yet, over the course of 2 months, he came very close to winning the Heisman, and many people believe should have. Well, how did that happen? Oh, I'll tell you how it happened. Someone saw him play football. That's how it happened. So don't tell me, well, if people had seen him play, that's a lie. If you want to say you disagree with the outcome, have at it. That's a reasonable argument. The idea that nobody watches these games is false. The ratings may not be as big, but many, many people watch these games, and other of our hardcore fans watch, if not the games, they watch the highlight shows for sure.
Yeah, and part of his problem too, I just pulled up his stats again because I was pretty sure I was right and I didn't want to say anything unless I knew for sure. 3.5 yards per carry against Notre Dame, like 27 carries, 94 yards. They did win, but he had three catches for 19 yards. That was a humongous game, and he won Heisman. And then he, of course, goes crazy against USC, but it wasn't like every single game was USC and Iowa for him that year. He had some amazing games, but it wasn't every week necessarily.
Great player. What do you guys think about before we get to picks here, which is what the people want on Fridays, the expanded playoff setting odds before we make picks against the spread, set the odds that we'll see an expanded playoff before the end of this contract. I will say it's 65-35.
I will answer this question with one of my favorite lines, and he probably won't want it to be attributed to him, but he's retired now, so I'm going to. Kevin White, the old Duke athletic director, you know, he's obviously at Notre Dame for years and just kind of a wise owl of the scene. And he did not tell me this, but this, he had like 72 ADs work for him. So one of them told me at some point, Kevin White said that, and I should set this up with why I'm saying it. So the college presidents are meeting Friday and they're going to, you know, they're going to have a meeting to make a decision, to have a meeting, to make a decision, to have a meeting, to make a decision. Da, 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 da. So they're, could be some resolution, but there might not be some resolution. Anyway, but it's a group of presidents. So it's all the 10 conference presidents, Father Jenkins from Notre Dame. So Kevin White said this about probably the ACC presidents at some juncture, but just general college presidents. See, a group of college presidents is like a Star Wars bar, right? You got like the, you know, you got the sociologist, you got the medical doctor, you got the lawyer, you've got the guy who went and was like the CEO of Merck or whatever, and is like some billionaire and he comes back to save state U. And you know, and again, I'm not a big Star Wars guy, but you basically have Jabba the Hutt and Greedo and, you know, a bunch of different looking dudes all there. So I give you that really long winding background to say this, like I learned, that's the precursor to say, never ever predict what a group of college presidents is going to do, because they are just, they're, and again, they are all individually wonderfully smart, right? And eminently qualified for their jobs. Collectively, through the prism of college athletics, they don't know what they're doing. They operate scared and they are afraid, like we said last podcast, lay low and don't make the big mistake. They tend to go to inertia because they don't want to make a decision that gets criticized. Because college presidents know that if you hire a bad English department dean, the only people who are really going to care are the English majors, right? But if you make a decision that messes up your team's chance to make the college football playoff, you get run. Or you make a bad coaching hire, or at Auburn, maybe a coordinator hire, right? But like this is college presidents in a nutshell. Barron, the old president at Penn State, remember they won the Big Ten and did not get in the playoff. What year was that, Bill?
16.
Yeah. Thank you. So he goes kicking and screaming that we need to expand the playoff. And then by the time they come around to actually sit down and decide to do that, who is the biggest obstacle towards expanding the playoff? The Big Ten. Yeah.
I feel like the simple fact that they revisited things this quickly, it seems like a whole bunch of people, number one, probably got yelled at because the expanded playoff seemed pretty popular and it seemed like it was going to happen. And then it was just a bunch of, you know, people mad at each other and it kind of died. But the fact that they're revisiting it this quickly, I think makes me pretty optimistic that it will happen eventually, because, you know, they got yelled at and they realized how much money they were forfeiting by waiting a couple more years on it. So I think it's better. It's more likely than not, but never 100%.
And to Bill's point, they want some, or to Pete's point, they want some stability, yeah, and to not be yelled at. And the realignment, SC and UCLA and all of that, that made it rather huge. Before we move on, I wanted to let you know, if you're looking for more quality college football content, your search is over. You can listen to ESPN college football analyst Greg McElroy 5 days a week on Always College Football. That's Always College Football. Find it where you're listening to this podcast or watch it on YouTube.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You guys ready to pick some games? We can hit on a little bit of some of the other stuff afterwards if you want to, but I think let's pick some games. It's Friday. We got state to contend for, and I have
Christmas
Bill,
Eve,
you and I have, Bill, you Christmas and I have a one-game deficit to make up.
I'm just happy I got UConn right. That was really, as long as I get one of the picks, I get just feel absolutely horrible about. As long as I get one of those right, I'm good.
Well, you know what? The thing with UConn, now they've shown me. Now I can treat them like I treat other teams. until they did something, I didn't care if the spread was 78. lay it, go. And now we can treat them normally.
Coach Moore has clearly given him some peppies. That's really what happened. You know, that's 40 new players and new pizza orders.
I always feel much more athletic and in shape after I've
that. You know what? That's the thing that people don't realize. Most of those guys are metabolic furnaces, man. eat it and it just gets smoked by their metabolism. So
I looked at your gnocchi and gained 3 pounds yesterday.
Yeah. Delicious. It was fantastic. It was fantastic. Taylor, let's start picking games, man.
That sounds good to me. Reese, it's interesting you say that, you know, now that UConn did X, now I can view them as such a thing. And I think a lot of these lines reflect these sort of uncertainties, you know, in the games you'd normally see like big blowouts, big spreads. They're Vegas is putting them at 22, 24 points. We're really not going to pick any of those. But this first one, especially interesting, Friday night, Illinois at Indiana. Indiana is a 1.5 point favorite right now. That is very, very interesting to me. I don't really understand it. Bill, lots of confusion on his face. Why don't you pick first?
I mean, I'm not going to pretend like Illinois is a Big Ten West contender or anything, but they proved more than Indiana did last year. And we got a nice look at them last week and they overachieved. Like, they were supposed to beat Wyoming, but they looked pretty good doing it. I realized a lot of the points came super late in the game, but I would have probably leaned towards towards Illinois in this one, or at least like a toss-up situation. And I think Indiana has much, much more to prove. I feel a lot better about Illinois.
You know, I feel the same way. I feel a lot better about Illinois. Indiana had a complete disastrous season last year. They changed coordinators. I know they got Connor Bazelak from Missouri to play quarterback, but I think Big Brett has the formula cooking in Champaign. I agree. I'm not calling them any type of contender, but I like them better than Indiana. So I'm gonna take the points and take the Fighting Illini.
So my favorite quote/stat from the weekend was Tommy DeVito, the New Jersey native Syracuse expat who is at Illinois. He was part of Syracuse teams in 2019 and 2020 that were sacked 88 times. Yeah. Now, he was not all 88 of those, but he was darn close to it, all right? That dude got beat up. You know how many times he was sacked against Brown Mustard? Zero.
Brown Mustard is not too spicy.
Yes. You know how he played? Really well. Because you know what? It's hard to play quarterback from your derriere. All right. So happy for Tommy DeVito. Happy for Illinois. The only reason I would pick against Illinois in this game is because the line doesn't make sense. And I could see us on Monday being like, that's why that line didn't make sense. I do like the fact that Indiana's defense has two lockdown corners. Mullen was out part of last year. Like, there's some cases for Indiana to be better when you study it. They've got a breakout player at tight end that Walt Bell, the new OC, is really high on. Connor Bazelak will like complete 14 of 16 passes for less than 7 yards. Correct. Like, we know that it's gonna, we know that's gonna happen.
That's
how he played. He's accurate short passer.
Yeah. He makes very safe passes and he completes them.
Yeah, less than nine implies that they're all bubbles.
That's true. No, I with Indiana, I can talk myself into the defense getting quite a bit better. I just can't talk myself into them scoring like very much at all. And seems like an issue. And that's going to be an issue for a lot of teams against Illinois too.
Yeah. Can you guys tell me the last Illinois head coach to have a winning record?
Ron Zook.
Winning season. That's right.
Yeah.
The Zooker.
Get on your jet ski.
2011.
Yes.
I say Bielema gets there this year. I think. Be close.
It'll be close.
So yeah. I'm not on the Upright Citizens Brigade bandwagon. I'm on the Upright Tommy DeVito bandwagon. As long as Tommy DeVito is standing, he's a good college quarterback. And we have one game of empirical evidence of that. So stand, Tommy, stand.
Stand, Tommy, stand.
All right, next up, we've got Georgia, a 17-point favorite in the Chick-fil-A kickoff over Oregon in Atlanta. Is there a more reliable tailgating option than a Chick-fil-A nugget platter? I mean, when someone rolls up with that, I mean, that's just delightful.
I mean, bourbon.
No utensils required for either.
That's true.
Whether you go with the Chick-fil-A sauce or not, that is a good, solid tailgate option. It's an easy one. You know, you prefer the people who go all out and bring their grills or their Big Green Eggs or their Traegers or whatever they have and really do something. But if you're going, you know, for quick and easy, it's tough to beat the Chick-fil-A nugget at a tailgate, I think.
Have you ever had those moments, guys, when you're walking from your car to the game? I'm usually wearing a suit. Reese, you actually wake up in the morning in a suit, so I know you wear one too.
Correct.
And Bill, you do go to some games, including Thursday's Missouri La Tech tussle as a fan. But there's like once or twice a season where I got my suit on and my backpack, and I'm like trying to break some obscure injury news and staring at my phone. And I look up and I'm like, there's like 80,000 people having a really good time here and getting pretty toasty and eating some good food. And I'm going to eat like overcooked hot dog and stare. Again, not complaining. Love our jobs. But there are days where I'm like, man, I'd like to take this tie off, toss my coat in a tree and go join, like Wisconsin. I have distinct memories of walking down the street and there's just like raucous beer drinking and parties. And I'm just like, you know, this is going to be one of those bad days. Just take the day off and just, you know, somebody can use wire copy.
You know what, Pete, not to distract you from your job, but at one point this year, when you and I are hanging out, watching games on the College Game Day bus, I'm gonna take you out and we're gonna hit a really good tailgate someplace.
Right, I'm in. That arm does not need to be twisted that hard for that.
Now I get kind of antsy and I want to go back and watch the games in peace, but we'll go, we'll hang out a little bit and then we'll go back and watch the game.
Yeah. No, that sounds good. So my favorite soundtrack in college football is the Bo Nix scramble soundtrack. Dun, 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 and he like goes like 72 yards to throw a 7-yard pass. Right. I'm fascinated to see that experiment. I think it's been a little bit underplayed just because he had some really good moments last year at Auburn before he got hurt. And one of the things about the Brian Harsin tenure that I think is underreported is that the decline of Bo Nix's health was directly related to the decline of Auburn, which had been playing pretty well under Brian Harsin before that point. So I've had some scouts go through Eugene who really like Bo Nix. Like they really think if he puts it together, he could be like a higher end NFL draft pick. So again, I'm going to say he's going to be the 8th pick in the draft, but this is my thing for this. I am a Georgia skeptic in the way where I need to see it, especially on defense with all they replaced. Now they have some Jalen Carters who are established war daddies, right? But they just have enough ambiguity and enough questions where if they go roll them by 37, I can't see that unfolding. And Oregon's talented. Mark Cristobal stacked good classes there.
Yep.
So I'm not saying Oregon's going to roll in and win. I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, shocked. And some of it, we're all biased by what we see, right? Like I watched Oregon go into the horseshoe and go pound for pound with the Buckeyes. Now I could have called it against that Buckeye defense at that point. It was so sort of flat and predictable, but I really think that there's enough juice for Oregon on offense, enough moxie at the quarterback position and just pure talent on defense where they can go toe to toe, hang out in the things of game. So I think Georgia by 13.
I'm going to say more like Georgia by 21, I think. I'm going to flip to that side of the line. I do think for my Big Friday week one piece that you should absolutely go read, by the way. I do this sometimes, basically when it feels like, you know, it's one-sided, but the other team's pretty good. I try to piece together, like, let's say we're looking back on Sunday and Oregon won this game. How did it happen? Over the last 30 years, number 11 is 6-5 against number 3. Now that's not a real stat that you should use for anything actionable, but I enjoyed it. It was a nice reminder that weird things happen sometimes and that wouldn't be that weird. So
this is not investment advice.
Correct. But I do think one of the points that I was able to put together on how Oregon could do it, I mean, Georgia lost a lot of really good pass rushers. They still have a lot of good pass rushers, but it's at least conceivable that there's a hiccup at the beginning of the season. The defense will be amazing by October or November, but maybe at the start of the year, things don't go right. And Bo Nix has taken 9 sacks in 3 years against Georgia. But if you make that 0 or 1 and he's able to actually, make some plays, at the very least they could cover, obviously. You can see, Chase Cota's involved and there's, plenty of former blue chippers for him to give the ball to. And, you can see them at least scoring 17, 20 points and covering, if not winning outright. And so that's kind of interesting to me. I trust Georgia at this point. This is a situation where we're used to, national title winners having a hangover and maybe kind of easing their way into the season. But I just think they are too talented for that. And Kirby Smart's going to have them playing at too high a level. It's not going to be 42-0, but I think they cover.
Vegas has done what it often does to me that will have me kicking myself after I make this pick. When the line was around 13 or 14, that was easy for me. I was taking Georgia to cover. Once it's gotten up to, 17.5, now that it's reached that, it's hit the too many points threshold because of Oregon's talent. I've described Bo Nix as being like not just a roller coaster at a well-maintained facility like Disney World. Bo Nix, the experience, has been like a carnival ride when they pull it in on the back of a flatbed truck. And a guy named Bubba puts it together, and maybe he fixed the safety bar and maybe he didn't, depending on whether he smelled the hot dog at the 7-Eleven and needed to go get it. So sometimes the Bo Nix experience is a ride you'll never forget. Thrilling. Other time he winds up rear end over tea kettle on the pavement, all scuffed and scraped up. But I've long thought that dude has big time talent. He's athletic. He's got a good arm, and he's fearless. And as Bill mentioned, the 9 sacks. He's thrown 128 passes against Georgia and thrown 1 touchdown, 2 picks. But I think he'll have a solid day. I think Oregon's not close to good enough to win the game. So I think Georgia wins by less than the number. So put me down for Oregon and the points. Decisively, but not covering the spread.
Next up, the post-playoff Cincinnati Bearcats headed to Fayetteville to face Arkansas, which is a 6.5-point favorite. Who is bringing the iced tea and who's bringing the liquor? Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
I think that Cincinnati's going to bring a little more liquor than you would expect. Ben Bryant's going to be the quarterback there. Cincinnati, Eastern Michigan, back to Cincinnati. This will be a slugfest game. If you like big-time collisions, if you like to watch monster trucks slam into each other, if you like demolition derbies, that's more in line with what I think you're going to see here. Arkansas has got a really difficult schedule. I'm going to go with that being such a difficult place to play. I'm going to go Arkansas covers barely. I'm really scared to make this pick, but I'm going to say Arkansas covers barely.
Well, people don't listen to podcasts for conventional safe picks, right? They want some conviction. If you recall our last picks podcast, I gently nudged the listeners to potentially think about the Northwestern Wildcats winning the game outright as 13.5-point underdogs. So in that same spirit, I'm going to bring a magnum of booze to Fayetteville, and I am going to say that the old Bearcats walk out with a win outright. I say they win by a touchdown. I say they go toe for toe. And I mean, look, like, the spirit of who Luke Fickell is not that different than the spirit of who Sam Pittman is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're both O-line guys, and you don't get a whole lot of coaching matchups. The demolition derby analogy was fantastic, Reese. Like, a whole guy's crushing together. And I don't think with all the guys they have returning on that O-line and the talent in their front seven, the Pace brothers we talked about on the last pod, are dynamic game changers. And the one thing we've learned about Cincinnati, they don't flinch. So I say the Bearcats got out a 20-16 win.
I was hoping you guys would agree so I could just stop thinking and pick the opposite so we're not unanimous, since that backfired horribly last week.
It's a good point. If we all pick something, you know to pick the opposite.
Right. We even
acknowledged, you in code.
We acknowledged we shouldn't be unanimous, and then we were unanimous twice and missed both of those games. I have gone back and forth on this game for months now, and it makes it my favorite game of the week because I just don't know. Yeah. But I do think Cincinnati, I think we've forgotten about Cincinnati a little bit. We just assume, okay, they made their cute little run and now that's over. But they were good before last year. They were good before the year before that. And Luke Fickell just has a program there. I guess, like, my numbers say, let's see, Cincinnati covers, then Arkansas wins by 2.8. I'm going to do the worst thing in the world and go against that. I at this point, I feel like home field and KJ Jefferson are worth a touchdown. I do feel like this is going to be a really, really fun and close game. I'll be disappointed if it's not, but I feel like Arkansas ends up winning in that 7-10 neighborhood just because new starting quarterback for Cincinnati makes just enough mistakes to tip the edge in their favor.
Yeah, if you're wrong, Bill, you have to call the Hogs next Friday.
All right, oh, God. That's a good bet. But you know, I don't want to be an alarmist, but if Arkansas were to lose that game at home, man, that could really set the tone for a major step back after that big step forward last season.
So. Yeah, it's Arkansas fans are amazing, and you just have to give them like this much evidence that things are good, and they are going to be the loudest fan base on the internet telling you how good they're going to be and how it's never going to stop, and they are the new, you know, they are the new everything. But you're right, their schedule is wild. I think my SP Plus number is their fifth in strength of schedule or projected strength of schedule. If they don't win this one, they can still obviously beat Missouri State. South Carolina's at home, all that. But there are so many toss-ups left on their schedule. You can't lose one right out of the gate.
By the way, what mode of transportation do you think that Bob Petrino will be taking when he arrives back with Missouri State?
Oh, man.
Did I say that out loud, really?
Is that why people
listen to podcasts, Pete? Do they listen
for content? Bobby Petrino is like the greatest gift to podcasts. Not too many people in the history of college athletics, for all the characters that have roamed the sidelines, had an affair, lied to their bosses about it, and then hired their mistress. Then got in a motorcycle accident with her involved and lied about it again. Bobby Petrino, a great American. Yes. And he's a really good play caller.
Can you imagine? Oh, yeah, yes. He's a terrific offensive coach. Yes. Can you imagine if he just said, you know what? I know I'm going to get it anyway. Screw this. And just led him into town on a motorcycle. Can you imagine?
Oh, the internet would melt. The internet would melt.
Now that was blog heyday right there, and he just came in and gave every single college football blog in the universe just months of content, and I thank him for it.
The neck brace, remember the neck brace?
Neck brace.
Yeah. What if he did that too? What if he rode in on the motorcycle and then took the neck brace, walked to midfield, ripped it off, and just spiked it like we're here. Here we are.
Yeah. So it's funny, sometimes we all get to meet these coaches and spend some time with them. Like Bobby Petrino, like, has sort of a meek personality. You know what I mean? Like, he's like meek might be too strong, but like, he's not an alpha. Like, he's not like some of these guys are charismatic. They light up the room, they pop. Like, you're like, wow, I could see how that guy could go in a living room. Like, you meet Bobby Bowden and you're like, oh man, that guy's like oozes charisma. You meet Bobby Petrino and you say, man, that guy's a really good play caller.
You know, there's some interpretations, meek being the wordsmith that you are. The word meek can be translated, particularly some of the early Greek versions, as being powerful, yet knowing how and when to use it.
Hmm. Okay.
Well, he uses it on 3rd and 6.
Yeah. Yes, he does. And his 3rd and 6, as good a play caller as he is, his third and sixth play calls are even better when Lamar Jackson's the quarterback.
It's funny how that works.
That tends to, that tends to happen sometimes.
The more you know. Utah, a 3-point favorite, headed to the swamp to face Florida. I feel like this is giving Florida a lot of credit. I feel like they're one of those teams that we don't know a ton about as they haven't played a game yet. So let's go Bill, Reese, and Pete for this one.
My SP Plus and FPI have Florida like around 26th to 28th. I figure that's probably about right, but I figure that's splitting the difference. Basically, they're either top 15 or outside the top 40. And either way, whatever happens, we're going to act like that's what we predicted all along, because it's going to be, you know, if they're outside the top 40 and this is a rebuild year, of course it's a rebuild year. They fell apart last year and too thin in the skill core, too thin on defense. And we'll say that, you know, that was of course what was going to happen. But if they're top 15 and Anthony Richardson actually, you know, turns into like a, you know, young Cam Newton, like we, you know, his highlight film suggests he could, even if all of those highlights came in the first two games of the year last year, we're going to act like we saw that coming too. Of course, you know, new defensive coordinator, of course that got better. And right now I have no idea which one of those shows up, and it makes me concerned, because I just automatically assume Utah handles this game. They're tough. It'll be interesting to see how, if they can keep the chip on their shoulder now that, you know, people are picking them to make the college football playoff. That's kind of hard to do, but they're just such a known entity, and Cam Rising is such a fun quarterback, so efficient. I guess I'm going to pick Utah in this game, but I know like there's such a high potential for feeling stupid, because Florida could just be Florida and have, you know, new coaches uncover this athleticism that we didn't see enough of last year. And, you know, they roll by 17 and we act like, yeah, of course they did. They're so athletic and so awesome.
I'm doubling down. I'm picking Utah to go to the playoff. I'm picking Utah to win this game by double figures.
Okay.
I think they'll go in and Billy Napier will have Florida playing hard, but they won't be able to stick. If it were someone less disciplined than Kyle Whittingham's program, they didn't have so much experience coming back, I'd probably feel a lot differently. But I think they'll come in and handle it, and they will be awarded the trophy of the Meyer Mullen Diabate Bowl for all the intertwining between the two programs. That is one of my, we do all of these other storylines. And because I think that he has a chance of replacing one of my favorite players to, in a way, replacing one of my favorite players to watch last year, Devin Lloyd, Mahmoud Diabate, who was, I think, second for the Gators in tackles last year, making his first, playing his first game for Utah in the swamp against Florida, is, I don't know, one of those compelling modern storylines that I'm excited to see. I think Utah wins the game, and I think they are convincingly the better team when they walk out of there.
So I'm going to pick Utah too, and I'm not going to like triple down on the reasoning. Yeah. Here's the most interesting little nugget that I'm going to watch that game for. And I'm going to talk about this a little bit at some point on game day on Saturday, but Anthony Richardson to me is the single most compelling player in the entire country, because the ceiling is unbelievably high. The fate of a program, like Bill said, like you could argue a lot of, you could argue 6-6, you can argue 10-2 for, like, and I think it rests on him singularly. And if you look back at his body of work, injuries, like he didn't finish games.
Right.
Like, I don't know if he finished a game. Like, so like if he finishes the game, I don't feel great about this pick. If he doesn't, you know, and then how much do you run him? How much do you, like, there's all these variables that go in. I just assume it's going to be 126 degrees in Gainesville on Saturday. I don't actually know that. I haven't gone AccuWeather on you guys, but like looking at Richardson, looking at his skill, like the texts I've gotten from NFL scouts this summer, they've been agape about him, gushing about him. Thank God for Bryce Young, by the way, because like he's five, whatever, and lost every day of the offseason. Thank God he gets to go torch Utah State and win again. And like I just felt bad for the guy. He won the Heisman, had his historic season, and then everybody's picked him apart for this many months. So go throw for six touchdowns, Bryce Young, and then people can stop talking about Anthony Richardson as the number one pick.
Afternoon thunderstorms, high of 90 in Gainesville on Saturday.
Central Casting.
That doesn't sound humid at all.
It's a Chamber of Commerce August clam chowder day.
That's the way we like it in Northeast Florida. Nice and humid.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, guys, it is time to put a bang in your yin-yang, a zing in your zang-zang, a ting in your tang-tang. It is Notre Dame heading to Ohio State in Columbus for the College Game Day game. Ohio State, a 17-point favorite. Pete Bill Reese for this one.
I would love a, like, you know, last possession game in the Horseshoe on Saturday night. It's going to be electric. I'm on the ground in Columbus already. You can feel the big game buzz. LeBron's going to be there. There's just going to be I was talking to Brian Voltolini at Ohio State yesterday, and he showed me all of the former players coming back from the last 20 years, and I would name them all, but we'd have to do another hour of the podcast. I mean, everybody from Zeke to Mike Thomas is on the maybe. I mean, they're the Joe Burrow. Like, the world is coming back to, you know, it's just like the things that make big college games great are sort of some of the periphery stuff. So that said, I'm taking the Buckeyes, and I'm taking them to cover. And if I had to sort of funnel it down to one point, it's that I just don't think Notre Dame's going to be able to score with Ohio State. I don't think they have the skill on the outside. Other than Michael Mayer, I don't see their passing game being dynamic enough. I am yet to trust Tyler Buchner because I have not seen it empirically from him. I mean, the pathway for Notre Dame to win or cover is riding their O-line. Jarrett Patterson's health, if you are investing in this game, should be a storyline that you do follow. Notre Dame has elite tackles, good backs. Ohio State showed the capability at times last year to get pushed around up front. So, like, there is a path for this to happen. I'm not saying it with, like, outlandish conviction, but I just think the combination of stakes, moment, atmosphere, and the skill that Ohio State has coming back from going to practice this week, people are very high on, you know, the receivers other than Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Like, they feel like, look, they're going to take a step back losing two first round picks, but they don't think it will be a precipitous one. So, and Cade Stover has really been the guy who's popped this camp for Ohio State. So I just think too many weapons, the way Ryan Day coaches to cover. Does that make sense? Like, Ryan Day likes to pass the football. Ryan Day wants to score every possession, and I don't see Notre Dame having the firepower yet to do that. Credit Marcus Freeman. There are seemingly quarterback answers on the way, seemingly receiver answers on the way. He's recruited really well, but I just think it's going to take a little time for Notre Dame to get there. And Ohio State is just a half star better across the board in terms of talent.
Yeah, and I think that's why they win, for sure. They're just more talented. I love this game right out of the gate because, you know, we've spent all offseason kind of with this top three versus everybody else narrative, and Alabama-Georgia being in that top three makes sense. They were kind of, you know, the two best teams last year, and they kind of made the national title game. But Ohio State did have a definitive issue that they have to solve this season in terms of, you know, they played the four most physical teams they played last year, or probably the four most physical, were Minnesota, Oregon, Michigan, and Utah. All four of those teams rushed for over 200 yards. Two of them won the game outright, and the other, Utah scared the heck out of them, and Minnesota had it a game for quite a while as well. I think Notre Dame's going to be able to do something. So, Jarrett Patterson needs to be great. He needs to be 100%. But I do think they'll be able to test Ohio State in exactly the way we need to see Ohio State tested to know for sure that they're going to be as good as we say. So I like it in that regard. And I do think that between that and the fact that, you know, I'm not going to say that anybody's going to really stop Ohio State this year or hold them to like less than 35 points necessarily. But I think Notre Dame could hold them to 35 and they could score, 21 or 24 and make this a game and make it a really fun a fun environment for at least, three quarters, something like that. So I'm picking Notre Dame to cover. I do love, their defensive line is really, really solid. They could build adversity for Ohio State. And if Ohio State really does overcome that adversity and win, 42 to 14 or something, they're a ridiculously good football team.
I was in the horseshoe the day that a battered and bruised Michigan State team walked in and took down Ohio State. I was in the horseshoe the night that Baker Mayfield brought in Oklahoma, seemingly overwhelmed, and planted the flag right in the middle of that big block O. And I pounded the desk last year on week zero and said not that Oregon had a chance to win in Columbus, but that Oregon would win in Columbus. And all three of those things came true. And I sat beside Marcus Freeman at the NFL draft and told him about the spread being two touchdowns. And he said, keep making it go up, up, up. Because Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish, the Golden Domers, were going to use that as motivation to go in and follow the path of Mark D'Antonio and Baker Mayfield and Mario Cristobal last year. Anthony Brown, I guess, maybe the better analogy, and the running backs for Oregon. So there is a path. It has to do with running the ball. It has to do with controlling the tempo as best they can and keeping the Ohio State offense off the field. There's a lot of history behind this, and it's not going to matter. Ohio State covers. They cover late because Notre Dame will play them tough and Marcus will have them ready, and it'll look for all the world like they're threatening them, and Ohio State will pop a couple late and they'll cover the spread.
I thought you were picking Notre Dame outright. I was getting ready.
I was gonna find you here in Columbus and put a leprechaun hat on if you did that, Reese.
that's a Corso move. Maybe
I know.
I hope Corso. We never know what he's going to do with the headgear pick. I hope that he puts on the leprechaun hat and dances an Irish jig right in front.
Oh, that would be so beautiful. That would be beautiful.
We've got a little. The one thing I've found out. The three of us, but I think particularly Pete and I, we have a little antagonistic spirit that bubbles up every now and then, a little WWE flair that we can enjoy. We call Chris Felica the Iron Sheik sometimes because he likes to come in and do it. And Bear on game day Saturday, Bear's going to play the role of Iron Sheik, and not because he's playing a role, but because he means it. I'll set it up like this. We don't know exactly what he'll do or say, but the 2002 national championship team at Ohio State is being honored this weekend. They'll be there. They're going to be part of game day on Saturday morning. And as you guys, I'm sure, are aware, the Bear is a proud University of Miami alum who still has some bitter feelings about that championship game in 2002. So he might have a differing opinion about a certain pass interference call.
That's interesting. I know our colleague Dustin Fox is going to be back. He's doing the Friday night game. He's coming back. He's fired up. I know a couple guys from that Ohio State era. They're fired up. They will not be fired up that Bear brings up the name of the specific back judge.
He knows it. He's right. It was Terry Joseph, right?
I think it was.
That sounds right. It was.
Yeah. Bear will have. Bear will be ready to call him out immediately, I think. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe Bear gets caught up in the moment. The people love Bear, so maybe he's more conciliatory in the moment. But
poor Terry's probably retired in Myrtle Beach. Just need his Saturday ruined by
he's
Bear.
Like, seriously? He's like, seriously? All these young guys trying to watch a game, right?
Taylor, this is where I'm curious. We had talked about this, so this is where we go impromptu on the pod. I had suggested that we all pick a game that we consider the lock of the week that is outside of the span of mainstream popular games. We did not, I don't think, tell Bill or Reese this. So we'd be putting them on the spot, which is quite frankly a little bit more fun. Does anyone have any interest in doing that? And certainly, Taylor, you and Sarah can jump in with your own locks if we want to wrap up that way.
I've got mine queued up. I'm game.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. If you guys will both do it first, yeah. I will have mine ready by the time you go. Okay.
You can tell the level of research here is pretty. It's pretty strong. So buy Apple stock.
Do I have to go first since I said it, or are you going first?
Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. No, So one of my favorite things about the college football season is just rampant August optimism. And, you know, I put out my final SP Plus projections in the middle of the month, and a fan base that has very little reason to be optimistic just gets so angry at me because my numbers don't have them like in the top 30 or something. And this year, by far, the most pushback I got in those final rankings was from Arizona fans who are appalled that they're projected, whatever it is, 102nd or something to that effect, 104th. Because, you know, they're clearly going to be infinitely better this year. They've lost 23 of 24 games. Like, they're absolutely going to be better this year. I definitely think, you know, I like Jaden Delora. I like Jacob Cowing, the UTEP receiver. They got some fun transfers, Hunter Echols. They're going to be better. The gap between them and everybody else was enormous the last couple of years. And San Diego State, they won 4 of 5 against Pac-12 teams. They beat Arizona by 24 points last year. They won 26 games in the last 3 years, even, you know, with a small 2020 season. I don't see a gap closing to that degree that makes San Diego State -6 a rational line here. And that's what the line is. Games in San Diego. It's San Diego State -6. It should be like San Diego State -14. And that's my best. I mean, I'm open to be surprised because, you know, it'd be a lot more fun if Arizona was fun again, but I don't see enough evidence for why we should just assume that's going to happen. And San Diego State, for all their offensive, you know, for all the rock fights they enjoy, they are pretty good at those rock fights. They're pretty good at defense. And I just don't see the gap having closed that much.
I looked at that game. I probably would have picked it if you didn't. It's just the, you know, like certain lines just don't make sense. So yep. What was San Diego State against the Pac-12 last year, Bill?
Either 2-0 or 3-0. Like they've, I know
they're. Oh no, against the Pac-12. I thought they were like, oh, maybe I'm thinking BYU.
Yeah, you're BYU thinking, was the team that BYU. Suddenly played like yeah. 8
yes.
games. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's my,
but they did go 2-0. They beat Utah. Rising, but they beat them.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, I'm going to go straight obscure because if you're going to go pick a lock of the week, why, like, you know, you might as well, you might as well surprise some people. I'm going to take Liberty at Southern Miss. Liberty is a 3.5-point underdog. Look, Southern Miss had like 7 quarterbacks last year. They literally like running a DB out there by the end of the year and, you know, playing the single wing.
And their offense got better when they did
that. Yes, no, exactly. Like, so it's still a program under Will Hall that's in transition. I think he's doing a very good job there, but I just don't think they are where Liberty is right now in this build. And I think obviously with the quarterback transition to Charlie Brewer at Liberty, the offense is probably going to lose a little bit of sizzle from Malik Willis. But I think Charlie Brewer is a professional winner of football games, right? If there's one thing we saw about him at Baylor, you know, I think he's 28 years old and he knows how to win. So I think they can roll into Hattiesburg with a significant talent advantage and a quarterback who is not going to lose them the game. Like the eternal reminder of week 0 was how often college football games are lost by a team and not won by the other team. CC Scott Frost and KF. Yeah. So I really think that Hugh Freeze knows what he's doing. He's an elite play caller. And I think they go into Hattiesburg and win by 10.
I do think it's Liberty -3.5, not +3.5. But you still.
I'm sorry if I said that wrong. Forgive me. I do know they were -3.5. So sorry if I said
plus. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Bill.
That's still a good pick. I think that's still a
thank
good
you.
Pick.
I appreciate that. It's always nice to have Bill's validation. It's like
you're ahead of me in the standings though, so I don't know if that's validation or not.
You did your homework.
And remember the Bob Knight mantra, Pete. Dumb loses more than smart wins.
That's correct. That's correct. Charlie Brewer is not dumb.
He's not. So they'll wait and see what happens. Now, look, my predisposition on this is to look for the stunner, sort of in the College Game Day Superdog fashion.
Sure.
And in the preseason, the Superdog that I wanted to pick, and there are rules in our Superdog picks. It has to be a favorite of greater than a field goal. I usually like to go a little bigger, go off the board. I thought by name brand alone that I'd be getting that many points in the Appalachian State North Carolina game. That's a little bit of a bonus. That's not going to be my pick because it's not fair. The spread's too small. I think App State's going to win the game. Now, yeah. I'm a little less convinced because the line's so close now, and there's not going to be the element of surprise. Here is my pick, more in the vein of Superdog. I know SMU has some explosive offensive capabilities, but North Texas looked pretty good in the opener. I'm going to say the Mean Green getting 11 or 12, wherever you like to do your business. I'm gonna take North Texas and the points, and I think they've got a chance to win the game.
Do you know who's calling that game?
I do not.
It is going to be Dave Ryan and old friend Tom Herman on the CBS
Sports. Oh, that's right. It's CBS Sports, isn't it?
Really?
Yeah. I think Tom Herman's going to be a great analyst. He's one of the smarter football guys. You've obviously spent a lot of time with him, Reese, that I've been around. I'm curious to see, you know, and he's a little quirky too, you know?
Yeah.
He's kind of funny and witty. Yeah. So I don't think he'll be a one game at a time guy in the booth. So I'm curious to see that. I hope that game's on at like 1 a.m. I don't actually know when it starts.
7:30 Eastern.
7:30 Eastern. All right. Yeah, we're going to be a little busy in Columbus to pick up a lot of Dave Ryan and Tom Herman on the call. But I think that's a little fun little wrinkle in that game. So go Mean Green.
Yeah. You're getting points there. A little bit of a rivalry, sort of the Hayden Fry Bowl there too. And there's also another note in that North Texas Mean Green game against Southern Methodist on Saturday night that I'll mention on College Game Day Saturday morning too. SMU has a super fan, a man called Paul Lane, who has been to 542 consecutive SMU games, and he's not doing well. His health is poor.
Oh wow!
And the streak is going to come to an end. So our thoughts and prayers are with Paul and his family and the entire SMU family there. He's an important part of their fandom and a loyal one. And it's been a remarkable streak, 542 games in a row, and he's not going to be able to make it this weekend. We wish him all the best.
He'll enjoy Tom Herman on the call.
You will. You know, Tom Herman, I went down to spend most of a day with Texas at practice. I think it was Tom's last year there. And our buddy John Bianco is one of the great SIDs in the country. I called John and said, hey, I'd like to come down and watch practice and just talk with Tom. So he said, I'm sure it's fine. Let me talk to Tom. And Tom was like, well, what does he want? Like an interview? And he's like, no, he's just coming to get it. I think maybe it was 2019 because I was doing the LSU-Texas game that year. And this befuddled him a little bit that I think that I would go down there. But I actually ended up having a really, really great visit with him and enjoyed watching practice. He's an interesting guy, to say the least. That was the night Burrow really broke out. Do we think in several years that Ohio State will be touting the return of Quinn Ewers to come to a game at the Horseshoe to watch at some point too? Jack Miller? Or are they just going to claim Burrow after he wins national championship in Heisman?
Burrow did graduate.
I know. Yeah. I know it's Tim different. Beck, Ohio native. I just,
Tim Beck
I just like
in,
to,
in,
I just like to yeah. tweak Scarlet and Gray a little bit because they get upset.
Yeah. So I'm going to leave on this. We see this in realignment. I have a big joke that's like people like to cast themselves as the hero in the play, right? Like Tom Brady becomes a superstar and everybody's like, I helped Tom Brady. I was a sophomore year. This, I did that. To me, the underrated hero in the Joe Burrow play is Tim Beck, who actually, I believe, was his coordinator longer than anybody else in college. And like Joe Burrow had to develop because he was like he was an AU basketball kid. He was like a raw kid from small town Ohio. And it was actually Brian Hartline's brother, Mike, was like the QBQC there. And like, that's the guy who works with the third string quarterback. Right now, Tim left, Ryan came in, did a good job. You know, like there are a lot of people who had his hands on him over the years there, but like, it was the actual, like, I need to go from this like skinny kid, you know, in a quarterback room with what, Cardale, JT Barrett and Braxton Miller, I think at the time. I might have one of those wrong.
And then ultimately Dwayne Haskins later.
Dwayne Haskins. I don't know if Braxton was there. I might be off on that. But anyway, that's the Joe Burrow dynamic is interesting. He's also right down the road, right? So it's like, what are you going to do in Cincinnati on a Saturday night?
Hey, no, I'm totally good with it, man. In this era, there are going to be a lot of guys because, I mean, you know, Jalen Hurts claims both. That's just the way it's going to be in the future. It's fun. So, okay, College Game Day. Got some great pieces. Pete spent time with Marcus Freeman. I know I'm looking forward to seeing you do that. And in addition, a tremendous piece that Jen Ladd is working on with Spencer Webb, the Oregon tight end who had a tragic accident and was killed in the offseason. The impact of that is going to be an incredibly moving story. So looking forward to all of those things on game day. And then, of course, the fun and see whether Corso will tweak Scarlet and Gray by going leprechaun hat and Irish jig or not. I'm not sure he will because Brutus was the first love. You know, Brutus was the first mascot head.
That's right.
Put on. So
that's right.
Yeah. So there you go. Guys, it's been fun. Good luck with your picks. Bill, enjoy the Missouri Tigers for the rest of the season, too.
I'm gonna enjoy having a free, 100% free Saturday to have all the screens and everything roll into. It'll be fun.
So our picks are in, and you can pick against us and probably profit accordingly. It's going to do it for the College Game Day podcast. Hope you'll join us Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, from just outside the Horseshoe on the banks of the Olentangy. This has been really fun. Podcast is going to continue to crank up. Great guests. We appreciate Bill joining us and giving us some numerical expertise as we make our picks every week. See you soon, everybody. Enjoy your college football Saturday.